then later this week, Emet Hashem, Thursday morning, we'll actually have a chance to explore Tanakh from a little bit of a different angle. Emet Hashem, Thursday morning, we'll have an opportunity to explore, is Hanukkah in Tanakh, or where is Hanukkah in Tanakh? And a little bit of a spoiler, the set latter half of Daniel has multiple references to Yavan, and we'll hopefully have a chance to take a look at that later this week. But we continue now from where we left off. The first four prakim, the first four prakim of Daniel, were focused on Nebuchadnezzar. Most of the time we were looking at Daniel, some of the time we were looking at Hanan, Mishael, Azariah with or without Daniel, but the first four prakim were always focused on Nebuchadnezzar, the mighty emperor of Babel, the terrible emperor of Babel, the man who was responsible for the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, for the dissolution of the Jewish community in Eretz Israel, for Galus Babel. And we watched the way in which Daniel handled himself carefully and proudly in his dealings with the Nebuchadnezzar, and how he sought to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's signs for how he was meant to open Nebuchadnezzar's eyes to recognize that the most arrogant man alive, to notch him down from his gaiva, and one of the most evil people, to bring him to a greater awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The curtain rises in Parakei, as we've seen in the past, the first six out of the 12 prakim of Daniel are the stories of Daniel, Daniel interacting with the emperors. The first four were Daniel interacting with Nebuchadnezzar. The curtain rises now in Parakei, and says we're still in the Babylonian Empire, unlike the next parak, but we have a new emperor, a new man in town, Belshazzar. And this parak tells one of the most famous stories in Sefer Daniel, one of the perhaps the only story that's responsible for an English idiom. The handwriting is on the wall. So this is the parak, the handwriting on the wall. And this is the parak in which we see Daniel interacting with this later Babylonian emperor, the emperor Belshazzar. And to a quick sketch of the parak before we dive in, Belshazzar, the curtain rises, and Belshazzar is at a feast, a massive feast with enormous amounts of wine. And at this feast, he has them bring out the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and they're drinking from the silver and golden goblets of the Beis HaMikdash, and he's there with his old chevra, with his political chevra, with many, many women, and they're drinking wine. Then suddenly they see fingers come out. Fingers appear out of nowhere, and the fingers are writing on the wall. And Belshazzar is beside himself. What does this mean? And we've seen in a fashion in which, at least somewhat familiar to us from earlier prakim, Belshazzar is scurrying around, as did Nebuchadnezzar before him, trying to find some magician, some ashaf, some mechashev, someone who can tell him what it means, and no one can tell him what it means. And finally, he is appointed. The queen appears, and the queen tells him that there's a fellow named Daniel, and your Abba, Nebuchadnezzar, found him to be very helpful. And he's an extraordinary man. Maybe you should seek him out as well. And they bring Daniel, and the Belshazzar has already offered enormous reward, overwhelming reward, and royal clothes, either third in command or a third of the kingdom. And Daniel says, no, thank you, I don't need the gifts, thank you very much, but I will tell you what it means. And Daniel reviews with Belshazzar some of the history of his ancestor, his Abba Nebuchadnezzar, and he says, these are some of the things that happened to Nebuchadnezzar, particularly what happened in the last parak, when Nebuchadnezzar was temporarily reduced to an animal state. And that was meant to teach Nebuchadnezzar humility, and you haven't learned that, and that's why this is happening to you. And he explains to him that he reads the inscription for him and explains to him what it's all about, and tells him that his days are numbered. And Belshazzar says, well, thanks so much, and proceeds to, strangely, reward Daniel. And as we'll see in the last pasuk, Belshazzar meets a very quick end. And with that, the parak closes. So that's sort of the overview. As we begin to dig in, so a whole host of questions jump at us. It opens with a Suda, which sounds familiar. So it's not the only Tanakh episode that opens with an imperial Suda at which Jews are or do or don't belong. Daniel is not at the Suda. Daniel is called in later. You wonder what the Suda is all about. Why is he making the Suda? That's not really clearly explained. The second thing which is strange is what's with the Klei HaMikdash? Why are they taking out the Klei HaMikdash? What was the motivation? What was the goal? And there's a lot of detail given, both about the Suda and about the appearance of the fingers. We'll see in the Psukim. It says the fingers emerge and they're writing, it's right next to the chandelier, it's right on the wall, and they repeats again, the king sees the palm of the hand. A lot of detail about the Suda, a lot of detail about the hand. You wonder about why the Suda, why the Klei HaMikdash, why the detail about the Suda, why the detail about the hand. And then you wonder also, what's the end result here? In other words, what is Belshazzar being told, and why? And why is he being punished in this way? This is the end of the Babylon. We're watching the implosion of the Babylonian Empire, because the last pasuk in the parak tells us that very night Belshazzar is assassinated, either by the next empire, by the Persians, the Medians, Paros Hamadai, or to coup d'etat by Belshazzar's own guards, who then hand them over to Paros Hamadai. So we're watching, this is the final moments of Babylonian power. What's this supposed to mean? So let's start from the beginning, let's see what we find. So again, the psukim open, Belshazzar Malka Avad L'Chaim Rav, he makes this incredible feast for 1,000 of his ministers, and he's drinking wine with them. It sounds like he's going cup to cup with 1,000 ministers, which is why, not surprisingly, the very next pasuk, the Ta'im Chamra, in his intoxicated state, he said, L'Hisai L'Mani D'Hava, let's bring the Klei Zav and the Klei Kasef that Nuchadihan Peik Nuchanetzer Avuhi. Nuchanetzer, his father, had removed min Heichal Dibi Yerushalayim. Nuchanetzer had removed these from the Heichal, the temple in Jerusalem, and now let's take them out. V'yishtim b'hon Malka, Rav Avonoi, Sheglase, Lechenase. And Belshazzar says, I'll drink wine from these Kalim, and all of my ministers are here will drink wine from the Kalim, and his Shegel and his Lechena. Lechenase are his Pilakshim, his concubines. The Sheglase is a little bit of a mysterious term, but it's often understood by most to be a degrading way to say wife. So his wives, his concubines, his all of his ministers, they're all going to drink out of these cups. They're all going to drink out of these cups. So what's going on? And then they begin to, in Pasuk Dalet, it sounds like they're singing drinking songs. But they're singing songs to when they're drinking. They begin to sing praises, Hallel, so to speak, to hymns, to the gods, the statues of gold and silver, of copper and iron, of wood and stone. And it's at that moment when the hand appears. So in thinking about the motivation for the Suda, what prompts the Suda, so you come across two different approaches. The Gemara Masachas Megillah understands that this was historically driven. That they all knew about Nebuchadnezzar's Nevuah. They all knew about Yirmiyahu's Nevuah. Yirmiyahu had said that there was 70 years. Yirmiyahu had said that the Perek Chaf Hey, I believe, in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu had said that there would be 70 years of Galus, and then they're going to come back. So the Gemara of Megillah describes that different people had made different calculations, trying to figure out when did the clock start? Which obviously drives when does the clock end. The Belshazzar had thought that the clock had started 70 years earlier, and that he had passed the 70-year mark, and he thought, wow, I did it. I overcame, I overpowered the Jewish God. I won, and he lost. So let's party. That's what this is about. Akashverosh did the same thing as well. Right? That is one of many parallels between Belshazzar's party and Achashverosh's party. And the enormous amount of drink and the degrading place of women, a lot of similarities. But you'll remember, of course, that Achashverosh is a bit later. Achashverosh is one of the Persian emperors that's going to follow Belshazzar. Several Rishonim, interestingly, both Rashi and the Radak, quote not the Gemara, but Josephus. Say, Josephus writes that this party was a celebration of military victory, that Belshazzar, the Persians didn't come out of nowhere, they were a rising power, they were a rising threat, and they had gone to war against Belshazzar, and Belshazzar had recently won in military conflict with the Persians. So he had come back, and this was a victory lap. This was a party to celebrate his victories. Of course, then you wonder, so it's interesting, number one, that the Rishonim are quoting Josephus, rather than Gemara Megillah. It's also, what's more curious about the Pesukim themselves is there's something that fits very well with the Gemara, but for Josephus, it seems out of place. What detail appears in the Pesukim? What do we know about the party? We don't know that much about the party. But what do we know? We know that they drank out of the clay hamikdash. Where did that come from? It could be he was so drunk that he didn't even know what he was doing, wasn't really thinking, but then one wonders why it's in the Psukim. The Psukim presumably are putting here because this spoke to where his head was at. So if, as the Gemara Megillah says, this was a celebration of he thought that he had overpowered the Jewish gods, so then understand this. Okay, now we've kept these in the vault for 70 years, but now let's party. Now we know that we won and God lost, so now we can take out the Klei HaMikdash. But from the Josephus standpoint, it doesn't seem to fit. So the Malbim actually blends them together very nicely. The Malbim very elegantly says that the two ideas really dovetail. Because he says Belshazzar was celebrating, as the Gemara says, celebrating what he thought was his overpowering of the Jewish God. And he saw his victory against Persia as affirmation. See, if the Jewish God was in control, so he would have taken, it would have been the perfect opportunity, Belshazzar thinks, for the Jewish God to take me down. And yet I won. So that this is sort of like confirmed in his mind that he was invincible. He was stronger than Persia, he's stronger than God, and he is it. And he is it. So this is sort of, it all came together. And then I think also, number one, the notion that he was celebrating about, the notion that God lost, so that has its echoes at the time of several centuries later, the second destruction, the second Churban, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara Gittin speaks of Titus, the Roman, entering Beis HaMikdash, and among the various ways in which he desecrated and demeaned the Beis HaMikdash, at one point he draws his sword and attacks the Parochas. And the Parochas begins to bleed. He says, you see, I killed the Jewish God. This was a common theme, almost a common trope. So the Belshazzar had been here also. Belshazzar thought that he won, and Hashem lost, and he's going to celebrate. So he takes out the Kalim, and not only is he taking out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, which is a very direct affront, a very direct message, the other details that the Pesukim give us also seem to fit in. The Malbim, to a certain extent, points this out, that there was a tremendous amount of, the Malbim doesn't put it this way, sort of a general, just the overall theme of the Pesukim, of the way the Pesukim describe this party, this Mishteh of Belshazzar, it seems like it's a general breaking of boundaries. I'm just going to ignore boundaries. Not only Barosh of Arishona ignoring the boundaries between human and God, he's also blurring the boundaries between which God he accepts, the God who Nebuchadnezzar had come ultimately to recognize, is totally, thrown under the bus. Instead, there's a very obvious contrast. We're going to drink out of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and meanwhile we're going to praise, use that wine to energize our praise of these idols. And it's not even religious boundaries. It's just like, it's even just boundaries of humanness. The amount of wine that he's drinking, the Malbim points out, the Pasuk stresses that he was drinking sort of almost like face to face, lo kavel alpa chamer shaseh, drinking with all of his social inferiors, which is something that no king normally would not have done. And we know from other evidence, even within the Tanakh, that including from Megillas Esther, it seems like normally the men and the women partied separately in Perek Aleph of Megillas Esther. And here the Davka is bringing all the women in. And again, as I said before, the way in which they're described is very demeaning to them. Calling his wives a shegel. The truth is that later on, if you look at Pasuk Yud, when after the hand appears and Belshazzar's initial attempt to get understanding has failed and he is beside himself, who appears? The queen appears. In Pasuk Tes, Edayin Malka Belshazzar Sagim Ispahal. Now he's really worked up even more than before because he's tried to get that interpretation. No one can interpret it. He's totally falling apart. Malka said, Pasuk Yud, Lo Kavel Mile Malka. Suddenly the queen appears. She enters the Beis Mishtaya. These are all drinking. And she says, don't worry, let me tell you about Daniel. So, who's the Malkaza? And where was she beforehand? Yeah.
It's almost like Vashti being separate.
You know? So this is like Vashti being separate. And this queen apparently was not at the party. She appears when there's a problem. Now the question is, we already said, we heard about Belshazzar's wives, as well as his Pilakshim. Shigela say, Lechena say. So then where does the queen fit in? Where does the queen fit in? So the Ibn Ezra suggests that this may have been the queen mother. This may have been Nebuchadnezzar's widow. That's why she wasn't at the party. Alternatively, others have just said that no, that she was the queen. She was the wife. That he was so surrounded by, he so debased himself with other women that they need two different categories almost of pilakshim. The shegel and lechena. This is an incredibly debased situation. Boundaries are breaking every which way. And there's more in terms of the ways in which he's trying to disrespect the Ribono Shalom, thinking in his drunken mind that he's won. You'll notice also that the Malbim points out, it's very fascinating. In Pasuk Beis, when Belshazzar gives the order to let's take out those the kelim, the Beis HaMikdash, he describes it as Heichal Adi B'Yerushalayim. The Heichal in Yerushalayim. Nothing divine about it. It was that temple. Now, when it's actually removed, when his servants go to remove it, Beidayin and Pasuk Gimel, that Dihan Piku Min Heichal Adi Beis Aloka D'Yerushalayim. In truth, it's the house of God. It's Beis Hashem. And the truth is that may be the way his servants saw it also. But he was totally attempting to ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's at that moment, was sort of like layer upon layer upon layer in this event, trying to put down the Ribono Shel Olam and generally just break every boundary possible. Beib Shata, Pasuke, at that very moment, all of a sudden, Nafaku Etzban, Nafka Etzban, the Inash, they see fingers of a man. As we said before, you come to problem number two. If we've begun to understand what the purpose or combined purposes were of this party, and that they are indeed expressed in all the details of the party, including but not limited to the use, the very strategic, intentional use of Klei HaMikdash in a very intentionally debasing way. Then we are with the next question is the details that the Psukim give about the hand. We hear about the fingers, and they're writing L'Kavel Navrashta. They're writing specifically right opposite the chandelier Algir Diksal Hechla on the plaster. And Malka, then the pasuk ends with Malka Chazei Pas Yad Dikasva, and the king sees the palm. Why all the details? So the Malbim suggests The point of all those is that Belshazzar knew he had a lot to drink. But it was clear to him that this was not a figment of his imagination. Number one, everyone saw it. It wasn't just him. Everyone saw the fingers. At the same time, and everyone saw the fingers, and specifically, it's right near the light, and it's on the white wall. Unmistakably, this isn't a shadow, this isn't unmistakably miraculous. And the kicker was that the king specifically didn't just see fingers. Initially, we hear about the fingers, but the king saw pas yada dikasva. So everyone else saw disembodied fingers. He saw a disembodied hand, palm, and fingers. And he realizes, I'm seeing something I'm not seeing. We're all seeing something. I'm seeing a little differently. It's in the light. It's up against a very bright white background. This is not something to ignore. And that's why he immediately... So some of the... there's some phrases in the next pasuk that are used in other... Can become... idioms for when people are scared. Are kubase dal donakshan. His knees were knocking against one another. And he's falling apart. His joints, he feels as though his joints are coming apart. He loses his mind. He starts yelling. Bring in everyone. Bring in the Shafaya, the Kesedaya, Gezerai. We've heard in some of these categories before. The various occult practitioners. He was a, Belshazzar was a softy. He was not like the Nuchanetzar. The Nuchanetzar had, you remember, more than once, he called in these occult practitioners, and he said, if you don't give me the answer, that's the end of you. Belshazzar was all carrot and no stick. He just says, whoever can figure this out, will give him argavana yilbash, hamnicha di dahava al tzavare, he'll wear argaman, who wear royal purple, he'll wear the a golden circlet or necklace around his neck. V'talti b'malchusa yishlat. The end of Pasuk Zayin, which either means he'll be the third in line, third in command, or it means he will be charged with a third of the kingdom. Once again, it sounds a little bit like when this notion of offering a fraction of the kingdom. Where do we have that? Achatzim malchus v'seas. This seems to have been part of the culture. But as I said, offering the carrot instead of the stick did not really help any more than it did with Nuchanetzar. Nuchanetzar's stick, Belshazzar's carrot, all the same. No one can do it. No one can make sense of what the letters mean, what's the message, and then he begins to become more and more frightened. So now, here we come to the pasuk we had seen before. And it should be added also, even the saying that whoever, the reward will be to wear royal clothes, that too is a Megillas Esther parallel. Right? Mordechai. Right? Mordechai gets to wear, there was Tchelos, here is Argamon, but the concept is certainly the same. Is that Tchelos? That's right. That's right. There's Argamon there as well. Thank you. That's right. In walks the queen. Again, either it's the queen mother, the widow of Nuchanetzar, and I neglected to mention before that the psukim several times throughout the parak refer to Nuchanetzar, including right here. She says this queen says Nuchanetzar in pasuk gedalf Nuchanetzar avuch. Your father Nuchanetzar couldn't get satisfaction from anyone else, but when Daniel showed up, then he was helpful. So there is some debate among the Mefarshim how to line that up. Does that mean literally that he was his father? Because we know that there was an emperor in between. In between, he doesn't appear in Daniel, he appears elsewhere in Tanakh. In between Nuchanetzar and Belshazzar was Evel Merodach, who was a son of Nuchanetzar. So some understand... Rashi says it in the very beginning of the opening pasuk. Rashi says Belshazzar was also a son of Nuchanetzar. First, Evel Merodach and Belshazzar, Rashi says, they were brothers, they were both sons of Nuchanetzar. Nuchanetzar passes away. First, Evel Merodach takes over for quite some time. And after he passes away, his younger brother Belshazzar takes over. But other Rishonim disagree. Other Rishonim disagree that the Mitzudas David, which is an anthology of Rishonim, that was put together in the late 1600s, early 1700s. So he quotes that the dominant view is that, and that's where you get the impression elsewhere in Tanakh, that Belshazzar was a son of Nebuchadnezzar. Belshazzar was a grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and when they say Avuch, that means he was your ancestor. Which means that if indeed this woman who comes emerges as the queen mother, this is she's Belshazzar's grandmother or step grandmother. Certainly, either way, there many decades had gone by. The entire reign of Evel Merodach, in between when the story had happened and now, and the mother again. Either it's the queen mother or it's the respected queen of Belshazzar, as opposed to all the other women that had been at the drunken party. So the voice of reason emerges. She was not the, whoever this Malkus was, she was not at the party. And she says, don't worry, Ivaluch Hayanach, Ziva Haishtano, calm down, your face can return to normal, your mind can come back to peace. There is a man, Isai Gevar Malchusach, in Pasuk Aleph. There is a man in your empire, Ruach Elokim Kadishin Bey. He is the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in him, and she begins to tell the whole story. Your father, grandfather, was always so taken by him. Kol Kavel Diruch Yetira, he had unusual insight, unusual knowledge, on and on and on and on and on. Yes, then she says, they found all these marvelous qualities in Mil Pasuk Beis. Hishtakchas Bei BeDaniel. All these marvelous qualities are found in Daniel. Di Malkas Sam Shemei Belshazzar. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, had called him, had renamed him Belshazzar. Ka'an Daniel Yiskarei Upisho Yehachave. So now let's call Daniel. Let Daniel be called, and he will tell the Pitaron. He will tell Peshur Advam. He will give the explanation. So somebody should point out that the Malba makes this point, that it's interesting that in the very last phrase she says, let's call Daniel. She just said that he was had been renamed Belshazzar. All of a sudden she said, let's call Daniel. So it could be, he suggests that, the Malba suggests, well, Belshazzar, which is Daniel's Babylonian name, was very similar to Belshazzar. So maybe out of respect for the king, they were going, but he had been called Belshazzar, but now we're going to call him, or we'll refer to him now as Daniel. Alternatively, you may recall, and this is part of the tension in these psukim, is that Daniel had been named by Nebuchadnezzar for Nevo Dezara. For Belshazzar was Nevo Dezara, and perhaps the queen is rolling that back. See, he shows up, Daniel does show up, and he says, again, the king, as we saw before, the king says, here, you're the man. He goes on to describe in Psukim Yud Gimel Yud Dalet, you're the man who was taken to Galus from Eretz Yehuda. Now he starts to, oh, I heard about you. You're the man who came into Galus. Nebuchadnezzar brought you into Galus, and I hear you have a lot to offer. It's interesting, hard to know how to read those Psukim, whether that's meant negatively or positively. It's a little bit like, you know, Potiphar talking about Yosef. He's the Eved, he's an Ivri, he's a Nar. Sort of like, you know, giving him the shtach, the Jew is going to be useful, Belshazzar says, but let's not get him too, he shouldn't get too carried away with himself. By now, Daniel's an old, old man. But I remember, as a child, you were a captive in Eretz Yehuda. Alternatively, the Malbim has a more positive view. He says that he's stressing that you were part of the aristocracy that had come with the Chanya rather than the Hoi Poloi had come with the Tzidkiyahu. Which again speaks to Belshazzar sort of wants to do the right thing a little bit, but Daniel bops him over the head. Daniel, he has a similar quest. He says to Daniel, can you please tell me I'm frightened about that writing? So instead of just telling you what it means, Daniel spends many psukim, even this long introduction that he was not asked to do, unsolicited Musar Shmuz, that your father / grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had taught him a few lessons about humility, and he ended up being, you know, turned animalistic by a divine miracle, And he learned to respect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you, where are you? Pasuk Chavez. Ant Berei Belshatza. You're his son, grandson. Lo Hashpel Livavech. You have not lowered your heart. You're not a humble person. You're arrogant beyond belief. You know all of this, and you ignored this, so you knew all this history. And here's what it means. Wow. So this must all be the background. This is the introduction. How's this introduction? So he goes on to tell him, specifically, you were Mavaza the Klei HaMikdash, your Vaza HaKadosh Baruch, Mavaza Klei HaMikdash, your party, and the hand wrote what? So now he tells him, Pasuk Chavei, and this is what it said. Menei, menei, tekel farshim. If you would have read the 5x3 matrix of letters down instead of across, counted, weighed, and broken. And parson is also it means broken, like a prusa, but it's also a play on pras, on Persia. So what's with the, you've been, he says, he goes on to explain, you've been counted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he weighed you and found that you're lacking, and that's why your empire will be broken apart and given over to Persia. So what does that have to do with what happened before, and what does that have to do with, and why the double menei? So the Malm has a fascinating suggestion. He says, going back to the Nevu of Yirmiyahu, which we began, on the one hand, Yirmiyahu says in Perek Chaf Hey is going to be 70 years. On the other hand, Yirmiyahu says in Perek Chaf Zayin that Nebuchadnezzar will have a reign, a significant reign, and then his son, and then his grandson. Even if the grandson is a reference to Belshazzar, and not to Belshazzar's son, depending on how you think Belshazzar fits in here, but still it means at least Belshazzar should have a lengthy reign himself. So there's sort of a conflict between those two Nevuos of Yirmiyahu. And so he says, that's what Rabbi Shalom was saying. There are two ways to count. Menei, menei. There are two ways of counting. And that's why the answer was tekel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu weighed you. So if you would have learned some of the lessons from Nebuchadnezzar, you wouldn't have lasted forever. You could have had a good run. But you blew it because you were arrogant. And you stuffed the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as a result, parsin. As a result, you're going to be broken. Now, Belshazzar apparently thinks that he still has a couple years to go. And I thought we had a couple of minutes to go. Belshazzar has no time whatsoever. I will leave you with this. Where was Daniel? And why does he seem a little bit sad in this parak? The answer might come from the latter prakim, where he already had the in Nevuah in the first year of Belshazzar about the four Malchios, and then specifically in the second in Parak Ches, it was this year, the psukim seemed to indicate, according to some, that he was already in Shushan. He already had left. He wasn't a part of what was going on. He was brought back to give this Nevuah, but he had already seen Nevuos, that this was just the first of many Golios. So he was already seeing this wasn't going to be the end. He's telling Belshazzar that you're over, but we're not over with Gauls just yet. In the next parak, we're going to see him, Daniel, still in Gaulis, but now interacting in a new Gaulis with a new empire, with the emperors of Paros and Mada. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I got it.
It is a parallel to next week's parsha. Yosef.
Yes.